Hello and welcome to the weekly Funds Fanatic podcast, in which myself, Gavin Lumsden, and my colleague Daniel Grote chew the cud over all things relating to investment funds and investment trusts. This week, Dan, I think we're going to start off talking about the succession to Mark Barnett, the Invesco equity income fund manager who left the group last week. We've talked about him quite a lot, but it's worth sort of catching up on it again, because Invesco were defending really their choice of managers to succeed on those very big high income and income funds. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, Barnett's departure from Invesco announced last Friday, so well, the worst possible time for this podcast, in that it meant that I couldn't join you on the interview with Tom Slater.
Don't worry, me and Tom had a grand old time, really good conversation, but it would have been, we did miss you. Really?
Yeah, so, you know, that sort of story broke on the Friday, and obviously a very big story, and required, a fair amount of attention and analysis. Not unexpected in the sense that Barnett's performance had been bad for a long time. He'd been at Invesco for 24 years. The last five, or slightly more than 5 years of that, he'd spent managing the Invesco Income and High Income funds, among some others, but those were the flagships. Those were these huge funds that he'd taken on from Neil Woodford, his predecessor. Those funds, amounting to around £25 billion at the time he took them over, now £5 billion, obviously still relatively big in compared to other funds that are out there, but certainly not compared to the size they were at the time at which he took them over. And that's been due to investors pulling money first in response to Neil Woodford's departure, at the time then sort of held as a star manager. And then later on, as Mark Barnett's performance deteriorated, so the funds are down around 40% in the last 3 years and right towards the bottom of the Investment Association's UK All Companies sector. So Invesco's passed them on to Kieran Mallon and James Goldston, you'll know more about their performance track record really than I do, in the sense that they sort of made their name, in recent years, certainly in the investment trust space, but performance not particularly good over the last 3 years, and that's, partly down to the fact that, like most of Invesco's UK equity managers, they have a very value-driven approach, and that's been one that's been out of favour. Invesco was saying that with Barnett's funds, his value focus, which the new managers share, has been an issue. But there are issues with those funds that stretch beyond just his focus on value, and there were some errors with stocks that hurt the fund badly.
Yeah, you're right. But Kieran Mallon has been running an Invesco in Income Growth Investment Trust for a very long time, actually since 2005. James Goldston picked up another UK investment trust called Keystone. He picked that up from Mark Barnett a few years ago, 3 years ago, in fact. And their performance hasn't been great, but the value style that they're pursuing has struggled. And, in the case, if we're looking at the net asset value, the kind of actual value of the investments rather than the share price, which is affected by sort of sentiment and has done badly. But if you look at the kind of investment performance that they're in charge of, over 5 years, Invesco Income Growth is down 5%. It's down 3%, which, it's obviously great, but it's better than the FTSE All Share. And with James Goldstone on Keystone, over 3 years, the net asset value is down 21%, and that is worse than the FTSE All Share. So, it maybe doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, but I don't know, what do you think? I didn't really expect anything different. I mean, it's quite typical in these situations for fund management groups, faced with a huge issue. You get rid of the individual, the individual fund manager whose name is attached to it has to take responsibility, and if it's been given a long time to be around it, then off they go. But the approach and the group might tighten the process, which I think is what they were talking about, and they'll find some new individuals, but they're not going to change their fundamental approach, because that probably be even more damaging to investor confidence. It would certainly generate a lot of uncertainty.
I mean, the emphasis from them has been sort of on challenge was the kind of key word that was repeated fairly often in the briefing on these changes. And so, you know, they've moved to a co-manager approach, which is, you know, is obviously a fairly common thing that we see across quite a few funds that are available to UK investors. But not something that Invesco has done in its UK equity team before. You know, I think the idea is that, you know, because there will be this challenge between the two managers, that it will mitigate some of the risk of, you know, maybe some of the outsized large positions that the Invesco Income and High Income funds had and that hurt the fund. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, stocks like Provident Financial, where, you know, a very big holding in the fund that then falls 70% in a single day. You know, that they were talking a lot about, you know, having appropriately sized positions, keeping an eye on risk, emphasizing the liquidity of the fund. That's been a concern with those two funds, given what's happened with the Woodford Equity Income Fund, which suspended and is now being liquidated, given its sort of large positions in unquoted and hard to trade smaller companies. The Invesco Income and High Income funds shared some of those same stocks, and some were simply a legacy of Woodford's management of the funds before, albeit in smaller number and smaller proportion than the Woodford funds. So, I think that is certainly going to be sort of one of the areas that they will be focusing on as they take on these, you know, what are still, and certainly compared to the funds that they have been running, they are very big funds. £5 billion is a lot of money to be running.
Yeah, do you reckon it feels like they reckon that things can't get much worse? Yeah, there's been this huge fall in the assets under management in those funds, and you know, maybe a bit more money will come out after Barney's departure. But they're probably thinking this is the kind of towards the bottom for this business, and that the two should be able to kind of hold the line for a bit and maybe build from there. It's interesting, isn't it, that they're doing this co-manager thing? But you know, I get the idea that they can each check, make sure that the other's not doing going a bit crazy or, you know, going too far on different positions. But it is interesting that they're both jointly running both funds, because there is an attempt to make those both high income and the income fund, Invesco Income and Invesco High Income, to differentiate them more. Because in the past, under Barnett and under Neil Woodford, they were virtually identical, weren't they?
Well, they were not only were they identical, but you know, there were points where the income fund was yielding more than the high income fund, so the names became absolutely meaningless. I mean, the way they're trying to differentiate them now is with the high income fund having that aim to yield more than the UK stock market, and with the income and growth fund, that becomes what they're talking about as more of a kind of core, you know, sharing a bit of kind of income and growth.
But would it have made more sense to have given, you know, them a fund each, and then you could have say they've got a distinct approach and they've got their own manager?
Well, I guess what they're trying to do is Mallon and Goldston do have sort of different approaches. Goldston is maybe a bit more like Barnett in the sense that he's looking across the whole of the UK stock market, so he's not just focused on the blue chips in the FTSE 100. And so if there was, a willingness to have some kind of continuation of that approach, albeit that it hadn't worked well for Barnett before, then that makes sense. Whereas, you know, Mallon is more a traditional equity income manager. So, I mean, yeah, if you do, you know, in one sense, maybe giving Mallon high income and giving Goldston the income fund would have aligned with where they want to see those funds going. But I guess the idea is because they want that sort of challenge, and because they want to avert some of the risks that the funds were subjected to under Barnett, that's why they've gone with this co-manager type structure.
How's the changes going down with investors? Any indication from any redemptions, any withdrawals from the funds that you can see?
We can't
Was it
see
too early
yet.
To tell?
Morningstar's figures on these, it differs between sort of different funds. Some funds report every day, others report every month. And of those that report every month, some with quite a lag, of which these Invesco funds are amongst that last group. So it will be a while before we see sort of what happens. What you can say is that these funds have lost, in terms of outflows, about £20 billion since Woodford left. So, you know, that's just physically not possible now because they're only £5 billion. By definition, the scale of the outflows is going to diminish because the funds are much diminished.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, it is worth pointing out that, you know, the underperformance that we've identified with Kieran Mallon and James Goldston, it's not unique to them or Barnett or Invesco. I was just looking at the latest sort of investment trust sort of share price ratings, and there's a fund manager Alex Wright at Fidelity running Fidelity Special Values. You know, really highly regarded fund manager. I think we've mentioned him in recent weeks. He's a value. He describes himself as a contrarian value investor. And until about a year and a half ago, you'd have said, you know, given that the value style has been challenging, is that it managed to kind of follow that style and deliver good returns. It has recently. This year, it's gone really badly, horribly wrong. And so I've just thought it's worth highlighting, you know, there seems to be, well, there maybe could be pressure on Alex Wright at some point. I mean, Fidelity Special Values is down 23% in terms of its net asset value over 3 years. And, you know, I think it's just worth pointing out that there is a big challenge for those kind of fund managers. And that got picked up a bit in another significant thing event from this week. Well, it's the monthly survey from the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. They do this fund manager survey, don't they? And it was a good one this week, wasn't it? It was showing that 68% of the respondents, the global fund managers, considered the recent rebound in markets to be a classic bear market rally. They were really quite cautious and worried about a second wave of coronavirus knocking us all for six again.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly had a very sort of definite headline coming out of it, that there is this widespread scepticism about, the extent of the market rebound that we've had since mid-March. Stock markets obviously fell off very sharply at record pace when the coronavirus pandemic sort of spread across the world and lockdowns came into force. But really, since the last week of March, there has been a very substantial rebound, driven in large part by the huge amount of stimulus that central banks and governments have been driving into the global economy to help it cope with these shutdowns. It's interesting, isn't it? So in terms of what fund managers are doing with that kind of bearish mentality, so cash levels are 5.7%, Bank of America has highlighted, so that's down from where it was in their previous survey in April, but you know, still well above the 10-year average, so there is that element of sort of bearishness coming in there, but I don't know, just in a couple of sort of pieces that have we've published over the last week, you get, there's one thing to just be bearish about the market, full stop. But then I think with some fund managers as well, you've got a bearishness around growth ops in particular, because these have been the stocks that have really led, certainly in the US, they've led the rebound. So Amazon, Facebook, Netflix, Alphabet, the owner of Google. And you've had, a couple of managers sort of talking on our website about worries on that and moving more into sort of value type areas. And I guess, you know, this the sort of the value and growth debate is, you know, a lot of the time it's dominated by managers who are just firmly camped on one side. So, you know, you maybe don't pay as much attention to what they're saying on that debate, because you'd expect them to say that, wouldn't you? So, you know, you'd expect Scottish Mortgage to be extolling the virtues of growth stocks, just as you'd expect you know, a venue manager like RWC to be talking about why value is due a resurgence. But a couple, you know, so Jeremy Podger at Fidelity, who has a more kind of, so he runs a kind of global version of Alex Wright's UK funds. He runs Fidelity Global Special Situations, has a more kind of, you know, balanced approach where he's got groups fund stocks into three sort of different categories. And so he will hold value and he will hold sort of growth. So he's just bought Amazon, he bought Tesla at the back end of last year. And he's talking about, you know, having bought Amazon in March when it was, you know, around $1,700, sort of its March lows. And, you know, now it's back at all time highs. It's at about $2,500 per share. You know, now he's just a bit worried about just how quickly those growth stocks have rebounded and have led this rally. Is, you know, thinking, well, maybe it's time to go a bit more into value. I mean, I don't know if that's, you know, something that you see sort of within the investment trust world, where, you know, where there are sort of value managers who are really kind of getting a bit more bullish about the sort of strategies that they have.
I don't know. They're getting bullish. They're just kind of probably getting tired of their own voices saying the same sort of thing. It's like, you know, mean reversion. It will come back. Growth can't go on forever. But so I don't think there are so many people saying that, values are dead cert. It's more in hope than expectation. But there are plenty of bearish fund managers that believe that the amount of monetary stimulus, extreme, you know, that the Bank of England and other central banks are chucking the kitchen sink trying to reflate the economies because of the corona, because of the pandemic. You know, the Bank of England this week, you know, talking about negative interest rates, having restarted money printing or quantitative easing, to use its more proper name, and so that, I think there's a lot more people talking, recognizing the inflation risk that this could bring about, which then indirectly people say could lead to a recovery in the value style. So it's all a bit odd, because of the plunging oil price and because of the recession we've dropped into, hopefully briefly, but the steep recession we're in, inflation numbers actually are falling, and inflation numbers fell for April, we found out this week. But nevertheless, looking forwards, you know, with all this money printing going on, you know, although the quantitative easing didn't have that inflationary effect after the last financial crisis in 2008 and 2009, there are a great number of people who are thinking, this time, you know, the only way out. I mean, the big argument of the bears has been that, you know, the central banks and the authorities, you know, the world debts have just gone up and up and up and up and up. And the only way for the authorities to pay off these debts is to let inflation come out of the bag a little bit. And that nobody's going to come out and say, you know, no central bank is going to say, oh, we're not going to follow a 2% inflation target anymore. But but in practice, they become a lot less hawkish. And in fact, they get soft on inflation. And so, fund managers like Ruffa and Capital Gearing, and they've long been positioned in a variety of assets, but crucially in inflation-linked bonds from the US Treasury. TIPS they're called, which they believe are, you know, cheap. They're not that cheap really, but they're cheap. If inflation was to really spike up, then you would be getting good protection from that. Because if you get high inflation, obviously all bets are off. That's bad for all sorts of asset classes. But going back to the value point, yes, if suddenly inflation was high, then those stocks that are offering high yields, i.e. the cheap, overlooked value ones, would suddenly look more attractive. So it's not that, I don't think that inflation is necessarily good for the value style, but it would be bad for the growth stocks. And so by implication, people would shift over into something that was paying something above the rate of inflation. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of sort of why it's bad for growth stocks, I guess if you look at, I don't know, like a company like Reckitt and Kiser, you know, or Unilever, companies that are able to sort of really just generate consistent revenues and keep kind of growing those revenues. I mean, to a large extent over the last sort of decade, one of the kind of key components that's helped the shares of those companies continue to rise has been, you know, the steady decline in bond yields. And if that were to change, which it would change, there was this upsurge pickup in inflation, then that would be bad for those stocks and good for value stocks. So that's something that Carl Dobby and Alan Dobby and Carl Stick, managers of the Rathbone Income Fund, are talking about, where, you know, they're another fund where they, you know, they're not sort of in one camp or the other. They've got about a third of their funding, you know, stocks like Reckitt Benckiser, about a quarter in what they call kind of cash cows, tobacco companies. Those, you know, maybe unlikely, Unilever, they're not consistently growing, but they are delivering consistent returns on their capital. And they're, you know, maybe a bit worried about those and sort of dialing down that exposure because they don't want to be exposed if there is then a, you know, what they call a sort of vicious rotation from the growth stocks that have dominated the stock market over the last 10 years into value because of a pickup in inflation. I mean, I guess the in terms of inflation and the, you know, the amount of stimulus that's being pumped into the economy, I guess the counterpoint to that is that people were saying the same thing after the financial crisis. It was a huge amount, not quite as much as we're getting now in terms of stimulus. And that, I mean, that never really did lead to a pickup in inflation.
That's right. I mean, there are huge deflationary forces through the internet and technological progress that means, you know, the price of goods, crudely speaking, has been falling. So it attempts to inflate. But, you know, the central banks are really throwing everything at it this time. And I think they're just those people who are predicting inflation are just saying, you know, something's going to break this time. They really want the higher inflation, even though this, you know, officially they say otherwise. It's a very challenging decision, though, isn't it? These managers who are kind of a bit agnostic on style, you know, they sound interesting. But for those people, you know, there's a real decision and a real risk to be made around growth versus value, because we held our first private investor event, online event on courtesy of Zoom, didn't we, this week? An income investing webinar. It was really well attended and it was a great thing to do. But it did really bring home, you know, the amount of questions that we were getting, that you were, you know, sifting through from the viewers, you know, really underlined the, first of all, challenge and the need for people to try and sort out where they're invested, because they've just been faced with this slump, not just in the capital values, but also the dividends and the income coming through from their SIPs and their ISAs. But, you know, our panelists, who included Toby Ross, a fund manager at Scottish American, which is a global equity income trust. Now, Toby Ross is works for Baillie Gifford, as you know. And so, you know, that's a kind of growth house. So, you know, he was arguing that you've got to be really careful about buying higher yielding value stocks because their dividends may well be unsustainable. But, you know, he was basically backed up by other panellists, wasn't he? There was James Burns of Smith & Williamson, Andrew Summers of Investec. And they were agreeing that, you know, the challenge was that, you know, you've been hit for six by the stock market falls. There's been a bit of a rebound, a bit sceptical about, you know, how long lasting that rebound might be. So things are still not out of the woods. But, you know, you're looking to supplement or find other good areas of income. And, you know, it could mean, that basically means reducing your exposure to equities or shares at a point at which they've fallen. And classically, you would say, well, that's the time to buy them. So meanwhile, if you move a bit of money into, say, something like infrastructure, which people mention, you know, that's they're quite highly priced, or certainly not cheap. So it is a very, it's a real conundrum, isn't it?
Well, and it's a good reminder of the situation that, you know, actual investors in the real world find themselves in, isn't it? Because I guess, you know, the temptation when we're talking about prospects for different sorts of assets is you kind of just looking at it in isolation, and you're just looking at, you know, what would you buy now? But obviously, unless you're just a first-time investor, or you just happen to all be sat in cash, it's not that one decision, is it? It's what you sell as well. And that becomes, you know, that does become a very big call at times like this, because depending on what you're in, some of them, you know, some areas of the stock market in particular are really, you know, have been very, very hard hit by the coronavirus falls. So, you know, do you want to kind of crystallize at that point? And that's, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult to know what to say. All I would say to any of our sort of listeners, if they want a bit more information about this, it's well worth downloading and going and having a listen to the recording of the webinar, which is available on both our websites, Investment Trust Insider and Funds Insider. But let's move on to our sort of last topic for this week. I mean, you know, we're in the midst of this recession and this pandemic. The fund managers and that survey we were talking about highlighted the most likely way out in the short term. The only way we're going to get a V-shaped bounce, you know, out of it, recovery, is if there's a cure is found. And there was quite a lot going on in that space this week. I think you were following it more closely than me. What happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, we had this huge move in the stock market on Monday. And initially that was sort of being driven by easing of lockdowns around the world, and so a gradual reinstatement of economic activity. And then we had this report from Moderna, you know, certainly a stock that I hadn't come across before, but a biotechnology company in the US, saying that it had, you know, it was reporting positive progress in admittedly sort of very early trials of a vaccine to treat COVID-19. And you know, really sort of supercharged the rally. So we had the FTSE 100 up 4.3% by the close of Monday. I mean, what's interesting with that stock, which is, you know, as you'd expect, has been doing very well sort of since the turn of the year, is just some of the fund managers who were involved. So Tom Slater, who we had on last week, or you had on, he's an investor. A few Baillie Gifford funds, including the Baillie Gifford American fund that he runs, and the US Growth Investment Trust that is run not by him but his team. So they've backed that company from its outset, really. So it floated in December 2018. BB Biotech, you'll know more about. They're invested, as is so Lyndon Thompson, who runs the AXA Biotechnology Fund. She bought in March. So yeah, it's got a decent sort of smattering of UK sort of fund manager backing. I guess I'd just go on as well. Just on that theme of, because we've had another story, not about a fund manager who's bought into the magical stock that's curing coronavirus, but just those stocks that are actually sort of doing quite well out of this pandemic. You know, that's been sort of something that's emerged as, you know, a theme as the, I guess, the kind of initial sell-off of everything in the initial stages of the stock market reaction to the virus has now become a bit more bifurcated. So Nick Ford, who runs the Mighton US Smaller Companies Fund, that's got a really good track record, but has only been around since March 2018. So he's been highlighting Everbridge, again, a company that I hadn't come across, but it's a US stock that supplies sort of emergency messaging, you know, when there's an extreme weather event or you know, terrorist attacks and something like that. So obviously with something like coronavirus and the lockdowns that have been imposed, that's there's a lot of demand for that sort of system. And Teladoc Health, which is a an online doctor service, you know, particularly in the US, that's been doing very well. So that's doubled since the turn of the year. So you know, amongst all the, you know, the sort of headline sort of bearishness from fund managers, there are some funds that are, you know, relatively substantially up on the year, and it's those kind of stocks that have been driving it. So it's not all been bearish this week.
No, well, that sounds really interesting, and perhaps you'll look into it a bit more and tell us a bit more about it next time. Because, yeah, as you say, things just got totally sold off comprehensively across the board in March, and then it's become a little bit more nuanced. But we're totally in tenterhooks, aren't we? Because on the one level, markets are in a fragile state, and the FTSE's falling back to below 6,000 today on Friday, with China looking to sort of take control of Hong Kong a bit more, and that's stoking up tensions with the US. So yeah, we're back to feeling a bit more bearish, and but it's good to know that there are always opportunities, and perhaps some of these fund managers you're talking about are getting into some really important ones in relation to coronavirus. Let's hope they're right, for all sorts of reasons. All right, Dan. Well, listen, I think that's probably enough for now, but good to catch up. And you're off next week, aren't you? So I don't know who I'm going to be talking to next week. Perhaps myself. We'll see what I can do.
Yeah, well, enjoy the
Have a
conversation.
good
Thank
time,
you.
mate.